Welcome to AEM Early Access, a podcast of the Society for Academic Emergency Medicine and the Academic Emergency Medicine Journal. I'm Dr. Gita Pensa, and here's what we've got for you today. We all understand that when it comes to acute ST elevation MI, or STEMI, time is muscle. The faster that patient gets reperfused, the better their recovery will be. But we also know that not every hospital is equipped to perform percutaneous coronary intervention. Today we are looking at a new paper in AEM entitled, Initial Treatment of Uninsured Patients with ST Elevation Myocardial Infarction by Facility PCI Capabilities. Two of its authors, Dr. Michael Ward and Dr. Saye Nigpe, are here to discuss it with us. Michael Ward, MD, PhD, is Vice Chair for Research and Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine and Biomedical Informatics at Vanderbilt University Medical Center. He is the multi-PI of the new VISTA T32 postdoctoral training program for emergency and hospital medicine. Saye Nigpe, PhD, MPH, is a health economist and associate professor in the Division of Health Policy and Management at the University of Minnesota School of Public Health. She is the PI of an NHLBI R01 studying the determinants of interfacility transfer networks for STEMI. We're excited to have them both here to discuss this paper, and don't forget to read the full text of this article, available open access from the publisher for a limited time. Dr. Ward, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having us.
And Dr. Nigpe, it's really great to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Okay, so for background, I think that most of the listeners are going to understand that time is muscle when it comes to STEMIs, but what do we know about the outcomes of patients who require transfer from one institution to another for interventional cardiology?
Yeah, and that's a great question. So from some of our prior work, we've looked at interfacility transfers, and first and foremost, we know that transfers delay emergency care. And when that comes to cardiac emergencies like STEMI, prior groups have found that patients who are not only delayed, but then delay their subsequent interventional care and reperfusion, we see that mortality is worsened as a result. And so that was a key motivating factor for not only this study, but the studies that led up to it.
And what data is there already regarding whether insurance status plays a role in whether a patient is going to be transferred for STEMI?
Yeah, so that touches on a couple of papers that we worked on previously. So first, we did a study a few years ago using the Nationwide Emergency Department Sample, or NEDS. And what we found in that was that if you were uninsured with a STEMI, you were 60% more likely to be transferred. And this is really interesting to know that patients are so much more likely to be transferred. But there was a key limitation in that, and that was what the actual capability of the facility was, specifically around percutaneous coronary intervention, or PCI. So Dr. Nigpe and myself got a grant from NHLBI to be able to look specifically at this. And we partnered with Dr. Renee Shaw, looking at whether or not PCI capabilities are associated with insurance status and transfer. And what we found was that that was actually not the case, that patients were no more likely to be transferred, and maybe even less likely to be transferred, which was a bit confusing initially and raised a really interesting question of what are the quality and characteristics of the facilities that uninsured patients with STEMI initially present to, which was the motivating question for the paper that we're talking about today.
Okay. So speaking of the paper we're talking about today, what was the primary question that you wanted to answer with this study, and how did this study come about?
Yeah, so this was actually a medical student project. So Sarah Lynn was a I think she started as a second year medical student at the time. And Vanderbilt has a great medical student research program. And so she started working with myself and Dr. Nick Pei. And what we wanted to be able to do is to examine whether uninsured patients with STEMI were more likely to present to facilities or emergency departments with PCI capabilities.
And so, and we're going to get into this in a little bit when we talk about study design, but just to set the stage, you mentioned in the paper the robust state-level regionalization in PCI care found in California. Can you just describe that and what the relevance is for that in this study?
Yeah, I can chime in here. So our collaborator, Dr. Shaw, has done some really interesting work in this area, surveying county EMS agencies to try to figure out how much regionalization or planning for pre-hospital care for STEMI patients actually is implemented. And so she did a survey over a number of years and found out that, you know, over the last decade, counties in California are much more likely to be regionalized in terms of their STEMI care. And basically today, it's about, well, not today, 2017, we have about half of counties in California that are regionalized in terms of their STEMI care, pre-hospital care. And if you think about how many patients with STEMI that represents, it's going on about 90% of the population. So California is really kind of a unique setting for this study because it really is sort of the best of regionalization.
Wow. Okay. All right. So tell us briefly about the study design and the methods.
Yeah. So this is a retrospective cohort study. So you can think about it as the data are already collected. We're actually using administrative data that has, you know, for care that has taken place already in the past. And we're actually relying on data. Those data come from the Department of Healthcare Access and Information, or HCAI, from the state of California. These are non-public statewide databases that basically capture all of the inpatient and ED discharges for hospitalizations in California. Mm-hmm. Just a quick plug, if you are a health services researcher, you're a budding health services researcher, these data are a really wonderful resource. And there are public versions of these data that may, you know, meet some of your needs as a researcher trying to study, do this type of study. Mm. So we use these data in a logistic regression where our primary outcome is presentation to a facility that is capable of performing PCI. And our primary exposure is going to be the patient's insurance status.
Okay. So your team then performed descriptive analyses to summarize patient, facility, temporal factors, and the initial treatment at these California emergency departments by PCI capability, and then compared the populations initially treated by facilities with and without capability. So tell us a little more about these analyses.
So we basically do a number of robustness checks to check our kind of assumptions. So we have, we use different types of diagnostic codes. As you may know, we switched from ICD-9 to ICD-10 over the 2015 mm-hmm. to 2016 period. So we, you know, kind of limit our sample to either sides of that divide. We also have a number of different types of controls for, you know, patient factors, facility factors, time factors. And then kind of the most important part of these analyses is really thinking about what it means to be to call a facility PCI capable. When we identify PCI capability, we could rely on self-reports from, you know, a survey. We could rely on the number of PCIs performed. However, when you use data like the HCAI data that come from discharges, you know, it's difficult to see the context in which a PCI occurred. You just see codes for PCI, but you don't know if it was planned, if it was an emergency. And so we really try to flex that definition to try to look at different volume thresholds, to look at survey data, and really try to get a, you know, many different ideas of what PCI capability could actually mean and use those as sensitivity analyses.
Okay, so let's talk about the results. Tell us first about your study subjects.
Absolutely, and I can go ahead and handle that one. So between 2011 and 2019, amongst STEMI patients presenting to California Emergency Department visits, we had about 135,000 visits. And if we focus primarily on those who presented to PCI capabilities in our descriptive results, we saw these individuals were more likely to be male, white, present to higher volume emergency departments that were less likely to be public, and key to this paper, patients were less likely to be uninsured.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so what did you find in your primary analysis?
So we, adjusting for patient and facility characteristics, what we found were that uninsured patients with STEMI were significantly less likely to present to an emergency department with PCI capabilities. So their odds were much lower. They had an odds ratio of 0.62. And this included differences in presentation, comorbidities, location, and facility types. And when we looked at the numerous robustness checks that we conducted, they all confirmed our primary findings.
So what limitations would you like to discuss?
Well, there are a number of limitations here, and this is going to be the case really with any retrospective cohort study. Really, you know, we have, you know, we just observe the patients that we do, and for that reason, they're going to be patients who differ from each other quite a bit. So you can see from our first table that the patients who show up at a PCI capable facility are going to be really different than patients that show up at a non-PCI capable facility. And that's just something that we have to try to address with controls in our model, which I think we do the best we can, but you can never be 100% certain. The other issue gets back to Dr. Shaw's work, showing that, you know, California really has done quite a bit to regionalize its pre-hospital care for STEMI. And that's going to cause a sort of generalizability problem here. So we're looking at a state that's made investments in trying to make STEMI care, trying to rationalize STEMI care and make transfers as smooth as possible. Could these results generalize to other states? Maybe they can, maybe they can't. We're sort of starting from a pretty strong base in California. The other issue is that we see patients in our data as uninsured or insured, but anytime you use discharge data, you're really seeing what their insurance status was after all the reconciliation happens to basically come to final payment methods. So in a state like California that has a pretty robust Medicaid system, there are patients who likely came in the door as uninsured, but were eventually coded as insured because they got a retroactive eligibility or had some other type of presumptive eligibility for Medicaid. And then the final things I'll say is that, you know, we're sort of treating patients' choice of the facility that they go to as really just, you know, a factor that, you know, EMS takes them to the facility, and that's the only factor that really matters. But we actually don't know what the method of arrival is in discharge data. So it could be that some of these patients are driving themselves to facilities. It could also be, though, that they're coming through ambulances. And so that patient choice, maybe sort of, it could be the actual patient's choice, or it could be mediated through EMS. And that may have cause some limitations in our results.
So what do you think we should take away from this study? And what would you like to see come next?
You know, I think one of the things this refers to is exactly what Dr. Nikpay was talking about. So that even though transfers may not be different, and keep in mind in California with a much more regionalized system, that generalizability is a potential concern around this. But even in such a setting, The initial presentation of a patient who's uninsured, that their access to care may be very limited. And the question is, why? And does it differ in other settings? And we're continuing to look at this. What are some of the characteristics of those facilities, especially in other states? And that's actually the subject of a current grant that Dr. Nikpe has to look exactly at this. And I think one of the other things is, too, is that this also underscores the importance of facility characteristics, in this case, particularly around PCI capabilities. Our initial paper without PCI capabilities suggested that there is this substantial insurance disparity, that uninsured patients were so much more likely to be transferred. But once we accounted for that, the conclusion actually went the opposite direction, but it still doesn't eliminate the access issue. And then beyond that, what are strategies for potentially overcoming these access problems? What's modifiable? Should we be routing patients with STEMI directly to PCI centers and bypassing? And that's an important question, not only in California, but in other settings as well.
Yes. So thank you so much for coming to talk to us about this paper and for your work. And I am looking forward to seeing what comes next.
Thank you so much. This was great. And thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for listening to this month's AEM Early Access. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes at AEM Early Access, all one word. Don't forget to read the full text of this article, available open access from the Academic Emergency Medicine Journal for a limited time. Today's music is by Scott Holmes. I'm Gita Pensa, and we'll see you next time.